This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Virginia's new fiscal year begins the 1st of July. Normally, well before now, lawmakers would have already approved a spending plan for that new fiscal period, a plan to help fund public schools and local governments, as well as cover the cost of every single state agency. But so far this year, because of a bitter stalemate over health coverage for the poor, no agreement has been reached. So what happens if there is no new state budget by July? Our Bob Gibson, Bob Roberts, Shelley and Davis analysis team will help address that question. Plus, two opponents of the so-called Marketplace Virginia health plan at the heart of the budget debate have also agreed to spend some time with us. One, a longtime Republican lawmaker from Augusta County. The other, the Speaker of Virginia's House of Delegates. An impressive lineup for sure, but if you've got ideas about the state budget or anything else political, we're hoping you'll join in too after the news. Great to be with you. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. What to do about the state budget stalemate will be much of our focus this hour. And if you'd like to get in on the conversation, we'd be pleased to hear from you at 888-WMRA-TALK. Of course, when you've got the A-Team analysis panel on hand, anything political is fair game. So topics other than the debate over health care for the poor and how it is stymied agreement on the budget. Any other topics, welcome to at 888-967-2825. As for that A-Team already on the phone line with us from the Fredericksburg Freelance Star newspaper, Shelley and Davis, speaking to us from the studios of the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities in Charlottesville, the executive director of the Sorensen Institute for Political Leadership, Bob Gibson. And here with me in the Insight Studio in Harrisonburg, James Madison University political scientist Bob Roberts. Welcome all.
Glad to be here. Good to be with you.
Yeah, hi.
I was afraid Shelley wasn't sure. Well, a bit later in the hour, we're going to connect with Republican delegate Steve Landis, one of those deeply involved in the debate over Medicaid and continuing to stand firm against any expanded coverage anytime soon. Then we'll meet up with the man in charge of the House of Delegates, Speaker Bill Howell, and get his take on whether a budget agreement is possible and what would happen if it is not. But Mr. Gibson, you first, if I could. Would you give us the parameters, please, of this budget stalemate and its connection to Medicaid?
Well, right now, after June 30th, Virginia does not have a budget. It has to have a budget in place, passed by the legislature and signed by the governor to be in effect on July 1st, or Virginia will enter uncharted territory, which is a state without a budget. And we don't really know what that means. We know that the state police won't be sent home, and we know that the prisons won't be prisoners won't be let loose all over the Commonwealth. But much more than that, we're not sure, because Virginia has not. We've gone to the brink of this several times before, and including one time very close to the June 30th deadline, but we've never actually crossed it. So we don't know what parts of state government might be shut down. We don't know what parts of state government will for sure stay open. And that includes the universities, the public universities across the state. We just aren't sure. And hoping to avoid that are various people in the legislature. The Senate has passed a budget that includes Medicaid expansion. The House of Delegates has just as insistently passed a budget that does not include Medicaid expansion. And we don't know when or where they will compromise, because both sides are playing hardball. They appear to be farther apart than they were when they left at the end of the regular session. So I don't know when this is going to be resolved, although the month June comes to mind.
Shelley and Bob mentioned that the Senate has passed Medicaid expansion as part of their budget and that the House is adamantly opposed to that. I call it Medicaid expansion. Bob called it Medicaid expansion. I wouldn't be surprised if you and most political reporters across the state think of it as Medicaid expansion. But the Senate doesn't call it that. Can you explain?
Yeah, the Senate is referring to it as Marketplace Virginia, and it is what their name for their plan to expand coverage. It's not exactly the same thing as just flat out expanding the Medicaid program. There are some some sort of free market principles at work in there. There are co-pays. There are other things that are sort of more like private insurance. And so that's why the Senate claims, oh, no, this is not Medicaid expansion. Republicans in the House say, yes, it is. Is it exactly Medicaid expansion? No. But is it pretty close? Yeah.
Bob Roberts, the plan, as I understand it, that the Senate has devised to use federal Medicaid dollars now available under the Federal Affordable Care Act, takes that money and uses it for people who are between, I think, 31% of the poverty and 138% of the poverty. So basically the working poor. And allows them to use that money, in some cases, as Shelley was mentioned, with small copays, but to take close to $2 billion a year in federal money and get those people to use those funds to purchase private health insurance.
Right.
And that's why the Senate is calling this Marketplace Virginia. And in fact, this plan was devised by a Republican member of the state Senate. Three Republicans in the state Senate, along with all the Democrats, voted in favor of this plan.
Right.
Is this the kind of thing that under some circumstances you might expect Republicans to be in favor of? Because it actually is expanding private business. It's using money not to go to expand a federal program, Medicaid, but to help people buy private health insurance.
No, initially, the battle was over efficiency in Medicaid. Somehow the existing Medicaid program was inefficient, and therefore
in the view of the Republicans
opponents. And therefore the alternative was Marketplace, which in theory would be more efficient than the current Medicaid. I disagree with that it's any more, the Marketplace is any more efficient than the current Medicaid system. I don't think that's true, but that was that the Democrats thought the Republicans might buy it. The opposition here is philosophical now. It's not over Medicaid expansion, it's over entitlement expansion. It's over the fact that we're going to create a new entitlement that would require federal dollars, many of those federal dollars borrowed, and the Republicans just are opposed to that. This is not an efficiency battle anymore. This is an ideological battle over expanding an entitlement. And we're talking about a group of people who do not have a lot of supporters, constituents, I mean legislative supporters. They are single or married adults without children who are living close or near the poverty line, who are not eligible now for Medicaid, and who are in this gap. They are not entitled. They can buy the exchange, current exchanges, but there's no subsidy. So in a sense, they are the dispossessed in Virginia who are really don't have a lot of people backing them. Not a lot of the public seem to be very much concerned with them. And right now, the Republicans are in the driver's seat right now on this battle. They're winning the public opinion battle over this right now.
Bob Gibson, we're going into great length about this particular element of the budget because both on the Senate side and on the House side, members seem to be saying this is what's preventing a budget agreement, that there are a few differences in other areas of what the Senate has approved and what the House has approved. But if we could come to agreement on what we're doing with this Medicaid-related thing, then we'd have a new budget. Fair?
Well, yes. They finished the regular session so close in the rest of the budget that they said it was unprecedentedly as close as the House and Senate have ever been on budget items before. So there isn't a great deal separating the House and the Senate other than this Marketplace Virginia idea, which the House is saying it's absolutely against, and the Senate says with three Republicans and 20 Democrats it is for. So
Bob Gibson, give us a little bit more about the parameters. Why are we stuck? Why is
those
20 Democrats and three Republicans are so adamantly in favor of moving forward with this kind of health care coverage expansion that they call Marketplace Virginia? And why are Republicans who have overwhelming control of the House so adamantly opposed?
Well, there are philosophical differences, of course. The business community is largely weighing in favor of Marketplace Virginia, saying that hospitals need to be paid. We need to keep people out of there. We need to compensate the hospitals for emergency room care that would come about if there is no expansion of Medicaid. And then there's the as Bob Roberts mentioned, the matter of 400,000 Virginians who are in the working poor who would qualify for more care for an extra entitlement. And the Republicans in the House are not saying that it's wise for Virginia to expand its budget to include that entitlement because they don't trust the federal government to come through with the money in the long run after it pays the first 3 years at 100%. They don't trust the federal government to meet its promise of 90% payment after that for those new Virginians covered under Medicaid.
So I'm curious about where this leaves us. Oftentimes when there is what seems like an intransient issue between different philosophical sides and the state budget is at stake, somehow a compromise is found. But in this case, the Democrats who control the state Senate originally wanted to just expand Medicaid, and one of the Republican members of the state Senate came up with this shift to what they call a marketplace plan, where you take those federal dollars and buy private health insurance with it. The Senate now sees that as a compromise, at least those three Republicans in the Senate plus the majority Democrats. The House says this is Medicaid expansion under another name, and as you and Bob and Shelley have just described, there's absolutely no way that we're going to go forward with that kind of thing. So how do you resolve, where is there room for a compromise? How do you end up getting a state budget, Shelley?
Well, I did think that compromise is really what you've had in the past when you have such a big, deep philosophical divide that is holding things up. If you look at, I think it was 06 was transportation and 04 was tax reform, when we had these similar deep-seated philosophical differences between the Senate and the House that pushed into a budget impasse. And what you got was not really a compromise. Somebody gave in.
Right.
In 06, the Republicans won, and in 04, the Democrats won. And I don't necessarily see anybody giving in here. If you're asking where we're going, I think we're going, you know, towards June, and I think that it depends on which side feels more pressure to give in.
Bob Roberts is a professor of politics and a professor of public policy at James Madison University. Bob Gibson reported on politics at the Charlottesville Daily Progress for some three decades before taking his current post as executive director of the Sorensen Institute for Political Leadership. Shelley and Davis served for many years as chief Virginia political reporter for the Fredericksburg Freelance Star, but she took a promotion a couple of months ago, and she's now that newspaper's assistant editorial page editor. We've got Davis, Gibson, and Roberts as our political analysis team, and if you want to talk to them, we've got a phone line open for you at 888-WMRA-TALK. In all numbers, that's 888-967-2825. What happens, Bob Roberts, if we're at July 1st and there's no new state budget?
As Bob Gibson says, we don't know. I suspect the governor will try to keep open emergency services. The most serious problem we haven't talked about, which will happen before July 1st, which will probably happen in the middle of June, is the bond rating agency.
Bond rating agencies. Which determines the credit
worthiness of the state of Virginia. We'll call an emergency meeting. And at this emergency meeting, the governor will go to New York, and maybe Mr. Howell will go to New York, and some other leaders in the state will go to New York, and they will be read the Riot Act. They'll say, if you go over the cliff, you will lose your AAA bond rating, and you will lose it for a long period of time. And that will send fear into the hearts of I would hope, both sides of this dispute.
But why is that important?
Because if Virginia is one of the few states in the country that has held a AAA bond rating for decades, and that reduces the cost of doing business, and it creates the reputation of the state for being a well-run state, and that attracts businesses. So I think that issue may force them to reconsider this stalemate.
So in a moment, we're going to talk with one of the Republican members of the House of Delegates from Augusta County, who has had much to do with the debate over Medicaid that is stuck in the middle of the budget stalemate. Steve Landis from Augusta County is with us, and he is actually vice chair of an all-important Medicaid Innovation and Reform Commission, We'll ask him about that and what he thinks is going to happen with the state budget when we get back in about a minute. Our analysis panel today, former political reporter and now head of the Sorensen Institute for Political Leadership, Bob Gibson. Former political reporter and now an assistant editor at the Fredericksburg Freelance Star newspaper, Shelley Ann Davis. And from the James Madison University Politics and Public Administration Departments, Bob Roberts. My name, by the way, is Tom Graham. And joining us by phone now, longtime member of the Virginia House of Delegates, Republican from Augusta County, Steve Landis. Great to have you back on Virginia Insight.
Tom, glad to be back with you and glad to be able to talk about what's facing the General Assembly.
Well, good, Steve. So tell us, what is it going to take to get a new state budget agreement?
Well, process-wise, to start with, my colleagues in the Senate need to send back the House bill that we always use as the version of the budget that we negotiate. The Senate, unfortunately, sent us their version of the budget, and that version always goes to the Appropriations Committee that I serve as vice chairman of as well, but we don't act on that budget. So we have not even put the budget back in conference at this point. I'm hoping next week while we're in Richmond that can be accomplished in some form or fashion, and then we can start the negotiations again on the budget.
If I wait long enough, Bob Roberts, you're going to ask a question.
Okay. Steve, the question that I think a lot of listeners are very interested in, what is this a battle over? Is it a battle over Medicaid efficiency, which is probably no more inefficient than Medicare or the state health insurance program for state employees or private insurance? Or is it a battle over philosophy, over entitlement expansion? We've heard different things. Sometimes we hear it's an efficiency issue. Sometimes we hear it's simply a battle over those who are opposed to expanding an entitlement. What is it?
That's a good question, Bob. And first, I think the question that we're dealing with is, should we have the issue of Medicaid expansion and whether we should do that, or related to the reforms and the discussion that the Medicaid Innovation Reform Commission that I serve as vice chairman of that's been discussing that over the last year, and how and if that should be holding the budget up at this point. All other states that have expanded their Medicaid population have had separate pieces of legislation, and then they have come back and included the dollar amounts that impact their budget as part of their budget. So that's on from the House Republican standpoint and me and many others, whether you're in favor or opposed to Medicaid expansion, I think most of us do agree that we need to get the budget done, and then we can continue the discussion related to Medicaid expansion. So that's the first issue. Now, longer term, the debate is whether it's appropriate for Virginia, since the Supreme Court has given us the responsibility to determine if we should expand or not, since it's a program that does impact Virginia's budget and our citizens. Will the money be there long-term for the sustainability of the program? Right now, it's about 22%, a little under 22% of our state budget. It's been growing at about 8% on average for the last 20 years. And it cannot, the program without some fixes cannot be sustained long-term at that current rate with the existing population, unless we look at raising taxes or cutting other areas of the budget. 75% of the state budget includes the 22% or a little bit less than 22% of Medicaid, then K-12, and then higher education. And that is a broader debate on from the standpoint of whether we can afford it, whether the money will be there in the federal government. It's not free money, as some people were saying. Yes, we're paying the taxes that pay for Medicaid expansion under the ACA, but it's also borrowed money because the federal government is borrowing every day to cover the cost. So we're not even covering the federal cost with Medicaid and other programs at the federal level. We have to borrow money to make ends meet at the federal level. So that's, I think, the debate.
Bob Gibson and Shelley Ann Davis, we only have Delegate Landis with us for a few more minutes, and I want to try and fit in time for each of you to get a question in. But we're going to go next to a listener, Steve, who has
a question posted on our Facebook page. This is from Cassandra, who says, in regards to state employees and what will happen to them come July 1st if no deal is reached, rumors have been flying, and I'd love some facts. Steve, can you offer Cassandra and other people with this concern some facts?
Well, that is a concern, not only for state employees, but local governments from the standpoint of what would happen if we were to have a state government shutdown. It's never happened before. And I hope and don't think it's going to happen this time. I think at some point somebody's going to realize that we need to get this budget done and need to move forward. But the concern from local governments and state government is what would happen. And since we've never experienced it, I think, unlike the federal government where they just operate with continuing resolutions and they keep operating even though they have no budget, we don't have any process in Virginia for that. We have to have a biennial budget, and, of course, we have to have a balanced budget. It can't spend more than it takes in. And so that is the, main question that we don't know exactly what would happen. I think the governor seems to think that things will continue to operate. It may have to go to the courts whether the governor can continue to operate the government without a budget in place, because the Constitution is very clear. Only the General Assembly can appropriate dollars. And if we don't act and we don't appropriate those dollars for the next biennium, which begins July 1, then I don't think, from a constitutional standpoint, he has the authority to continue to operate the government, which then in turn would mean that both state government employees would have to be, I think, either laid off or furloughed, and local governments would not be able to complete their budgets.
Shelley and Davis, do you have a question for Delegate Landis?
Yeah, I mean, so you are on the Innovation and Reform Commission, and I know that you all are sort of a last step in deciding whether to expand Medicaid. And I know that you've also talked about needing more time to see some of these reforms work. What kind of time frame do you think the Merck needs to really feel comfortable making a decision one way or the other?
Well, I think based on the information we've received so far, one is as you mentioned, we've looked at what we call phase one, phase two. They're in process and some of those have been implemented. We've not seen the total results of those, and the House members in particular are more interested in seeing what the impact is and if they're working or not. Again, to try to bend that cost curve so that it won't cost us, 22% of our budget. Maybe we can keep it at that or start bending what we call the cost curve and getting more efficient services for the same dollar amount for the program. But the phase three reforms have not even really begun. And I think from a time frame, it'll take at least another year before we can get all those things in place. And I think we're more likely to be at a point where we could actually make an informed decision, knowing kind of where our reforms are, what's working, what's not, or additional reforms. And obviously one of the things the House would like to see is another more complete audit, top to bottom, both financially and programmatically, looking at all the things that have occurred in the past from an audit standpoint. But if you do that, I think that, again, would take at least another year for us to be able to come back and then be fully informed before we make a decision.
Hey, Bob Gibson, I know that we wanted to give you a chance to ask Steve Landis a question, but we're now actually 10 seconds past when I promised Steve's people that I would let him off the air. So I'm going to hold you back to ask a question for our next coming phone guest. And hopefully you won't get too mad at me for that. But let me mention that since 1996, he has represented the 25th district in Virginia's House of Delegates. That district today includes parts of Albemarle, Augusta, and Rockingham counties. Republican from Augusta, Steve Landis. Steve, thank you so very much for your time.
Thank you, Tom, and thanks for the questions.
Well, now with us by phone, the man who has represented much of the greater Fredericksburg region in the House of Delegates since 1988. But for the past 11 years, he has also served as that chamber's leader, Speaker of the Virginia House of Delegates, Bill Howell. Mr. Speaker, it is a great pleasure to be speaking with you again, sir.
Well, thank you. It's great to be on the phone with you.
And to have you for the very first time on this program.
No, I'll come back anytime.
Well, let me ask you then, what do you think it's going to take to get agreement on a new state budget?
Well, I think it's clear we've got to get the offending language on Medicaid expansion out of the budget where it doesn't belong. And have what we are calling a clean budget, and I guarantee you we could have a budget deal done in a week once that happened. Unfortunately, the governor and the Senate Democrats are insisting on keeping that language in the budget, and it would be incredibly irresponsible for us to pass a budget with that language in it.
Bob Gibson.
Speaker Howell, assuming that Medicaid expansion or the Marketplace Virginia is separated from the budget and there is a budget by June 30th, how hard do you think it would be to reform Medicaid? Do you think that the way that is being proposed through Marketplace Virginia by Senators Hanger and Stosch and Watkins is something that can be done, that other states have done, or is just something that we don't know?
Well, I think a couple of things, Bob. First of all, when you talk about reforming Medicaid, yeah, you're exactly right. The underlying plan, the plan that currently insures about 900,000 people in Virginia, is dramatically in need of reform. Unfortunately, the proposals coming over in the Senate budget don't do anything to alleviate that. The Marketplace Virginia is just about the expanded coverage. And also, don't confuse yourself by suggesting that Medicaid expansion and Marketplace Virginia are two different issues. They're the same. They're one and the same. Marketplace Virginia is an expansion of Medicaid using the same federal money, the same promise of federal money, the same requirements handed down by the federal government, by CMS, as expanding Medicaid.
Mr. Speaker, you mentioned that the governor and the Senate Democrats are responsible for this stalemate because they're the ones who are insisting on this Medicaid expansion, as you call it, language being in their version of the budget. But isn't it true that it was a Republican member of the state Senate who came up with this structure for what's being called Marketplace Virginia with the idea that it was more Republican-friendly because it's taking federal dollars and using them to purchase private health insurance?
Well, if you want to quibble, if three Republicans in the Senate have joined with 20 Democrats to propose this plan, I won't quibble with you over that.
but is it the kind of thing that you would think, because it expands the private sector, that it might be more palatable to some on the conservative side?
Not those that have read the plan, and not those that have looked at the Arkansas plan, which this plan is basically lifted from. In fact, there's a very instructive article in this week's Forbes magazine, which goes in depth into the Arkansas plan, again, which the Marketplace Virginia plan is based upon, and found that it's costing the citizens of Arkansas millions of dollars in the first couple of months, and with the potential of costing tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars. In other words, it's not a well-thought-out plan. And certainly what we have in the budget today, which a lot of people are saying, well, why don't you just compromise and agree to the budget? What we would be agreeing to is a 2.5-page memorandum that's aspirational, that says we'd like to do this, we'd like to do that, a memorandum that relies significantly on waivers offered by the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, which haven't been granted in the past and are unlikely to be granted in the future. And we're to accept that as a quote, compromise and by agreeing to the budget. That's not the way we should do public policy. You know, Senator Warner in Washington, when they had the budget shut down last fall, said that we can have disagreements, but you shouldn't threaten to shut down government. And he talked about the concept of tying a budget together with something that's really not related to the budget. He said that would be like the Democrat Senate sending back to the House something that says, unless you pass our immigration bill, we're going to shut down the government. That's not the way you govern. That's not the way you develop good public policy. You develop good public policy by having an open debate, by being able to look at it from all angles, by having the spotlight focus on it in a special session. And that's what we're suggesting needs to be done. We could, if we had a clean budget without this Medicaid expansion language in it, We could get that done in a week. We could let the counties and school boards, the public safety officers all over the Commonwealth have assurance with how much money they can budget for the coming biennium. And then the governor can call us back into a special session to look at marketplace expansion, marketplace, whatever they call it, Medicaid expansion, and have a free and open debate on it. And that's how it should be done. That's how you develop public policy, not by sneaking something in. Let me tell you one other thing on this.
Can you hold on just a second?
It's a great point I'm getting ready to make.
Because I'm going to give you time for it. Okay. But I know that there are people who've only recently tuned in, and I want them to be excited about what they're hearing to the same degree that all of us are.
Okay.
Because, Shelley and Davis, this man who is the most influential Republican elected official in Virginia at this point, in addition to his role as Speaker of the House of Delegates, Bill Howell is also a delegate representing your part of the state from the Fredericksburg area. So I got to believe that before he gets to his next major point, you might have a question for him.
Well,
that put you on the spot?
I wanted to hear what my point was.
That does put me on a spot. A question that I've not actually asked Bill lately, it would be difficult to think of. But I guess I would ask you something similar to what we just asked Delegate Landis is, with the Merck having some control over what the state does regarding Medicaid expansion, what kind of time frame do you see it taking to do things through the Merck? If you all don't do the Marketplace Virginia, if you go ahead and pass a budget and we put more time on this, what kind of time frame are we looking at?
Well, I think Steve just explained it to you. I think we're looking probably at another year, 2 years, because the existing Medicaid system is a broken system. You've heard all the statistics. It's growing at 8% a year. We had over $200 million in fraudulent recoveries just last year from through the Attorney General. It doesn't work. Let me give you one more quote, okay? I got a lot of quotes at my fingertips, but I think this speaks right to your question, Shellyann. I won't tell you who this guy is. You'll have to guess. But
okay.
He told a group of like-minded people in 2009, I want to just make mention of something that I've talked about to many of you privately. I want to say this publicly. As we move forward on health care reform, it is not sufficient for us simply to add more people to Medicare or Medicaid, to increase the rolls, to increase coverage in the absence of cost controls and reform. And let me repeat this principle. If we don't get control over costs, then it is going to be very difficult for us to expand coverage. These two things have to go hand in hand. Another way of putting it is we can't simply put more people into a broken system that doesn't work. So we've got to reform the underlying system.
Mr. Speaker, we've got a question from Robert on our Virginia Insight Facebook page.
Before Robert asks that question.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Did you want to get Robert's question first? Or you want to make your great point first?
Well, I'm finishing up the quote.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Who gave that quote? Who made that quote saying two things have to go hand in hand? Another way of putting it is we can't simply put more people into a broken system that doesn't work, so we've got to reform the underlying system. He's talking about Medicaid. Who is it? President Barack Obama. In 2009, that's what President Obama said. We've got a broken system in Medicare and Medicaid. We've got to fix it. It makes no sense to put 400,000 more Virginians on a system that isn't working today.
Bill, was that your great point, or was there another one?
I've got another one, but I'm going to save it.
Okay, so let me give you Robert's question, Mr. Speaker. Robert here says, and I'm quoting him, quote, recently Virginia Insight hosted two of my representatives in Richmond for a discussion of expanding Medicaid in Virginia. One was Senator Emmett Hanger, a Republican to whom I think all Virginians owe a vote of thanks for working so hard to expand health care coverage to 400,000 low-income Virginians. The other was my delegate, Dickie Bell of Stanton. He did not once mention the human side of this issue, our fellow citizens lacking health and dental care. How can he and you, Mr. Speaker, be so oblivious to these human needs?
Well, it's easy to say we're oblivious to it. I think just the opposite is true. If you look at our budget that we just passed, we increased spending for hospitals in Virginia for indigent care by about $100 million. We doubled the amount of money that we're sending to the free clinics and to the community health services. We recognize as much as anybody else that there are people out there who are not getting service. And you know what, Robert? A lot of those people that are not getting service are already enrolled in Medicaid, but they're finding that doctors won't serve them. I have a very good friend who is a ER nurse at Mary Washington Hospital, our local hospital in Fredericksburg. She told me about an example just last week where a mom on Medicaid brought her four children into the emergency room because one of them had been up all night with coughing. And so here are these four children in this emergency room where they're seeing people with life and death circumstances because one of them has a cough. And I don't know if they ever got what they were looking for, but they should have been to see a physician, and they probably couldn't get in to see one because of the fact that there are less and less physicians who are taking on Medicaid patients. And you talk about going from 900,000 people on Medicaid today to 1.3 million people by increasing it by almost 50%. Who's going to take care of those people?
Mr. Speaker, there's one other question that I feel obligated to ask you about, but it takes some setup. Referring to the program that Robert mentioned in his Facebook post 3 weeks ago when Emmett Hanger and Dickie Bell, on opposite sides of this issue, were in our studio here talking to each other. Now, Republican State Senator Hanger from Augusta County is chair of the Medicaid Innovation and Reform Commission, something often referred to as the MIRC. And when he appeared on this program 3 weeks ago, he addressed a question from a listener who had called in and who wanted to know how long it would take to implement all the reforms that the MIRC was talking about so that once those reforms were in place, then Medicaid expansion could take place. And Senator Hanger gave us a detailed explanation of what that commission has been accomplishing, what remains to be done. But then he added this comment.
And the way the commission was set up, it takes a majority vote of both the senators and the House members that are on the commission in order to say move forward. What has happened is that the Senate members have thought, well, we've done enough. Let's move forward with the expansion. The House members have said, let's wait until we do more reform. And I don't have a problem with some of that either, as long as it's objective and you have metrics in place to evaluate it. The problem that I've had with that and why I'm pushing now for moving this process on is that several of the members of the House that are represented on the MIRC have publicly stated that they're not going to vote for it no matter what we do with reform. So I think that the spirit of our agreement has been violated in part, and I would like to fix that some way.
Mr. Speaker, Bill Howell, does Senator Hanger have a point? Has the spirit of this thing been violated?
Well, I sure don't think so. I'm not a member of MIRC, and I haven't been to their meetings, but I know they are working diligently, and I know all members are deeply, sincerely trying to find ways to cut the waste and fraud and abuse in the present system. And it's just like President Obama said, you don't put 400,000 people more additional into a broken system, into a system that is the largest single part of your general fund budget, that is growing faster at twice the rate of the increase in income, that is consuming over 60% of all the new money that's available, that is going to crowd out K-12, it's going to crowd out higher education, public safety, health and human services. It's going to crowd everything out. You know, when something's growing at 8%, it means it doubles every 9 years. We're paying $4.2 billion this year on Medicaid as our 50% share of the 900,000 patients. Does that mean in 3 or 4 years we're going to be looking at $5.5 billion? Perhaps, probably so, unless we do something to fix the underlying system. That's just paramount.
Since 1988, he has represented the 28th District in Virginia's House of Delegates, that district today including parts of Fredericksburg and Stafford County. And for the past 11 years, he has been the leader of the House chamber, Speaker of the Virginia House of Delegates, Bill Howell. Mr. Speaker, thank you so very much for making some time for us here on Virginia Insight.
Well, thank you for having me. I had some more points to make. Maybe I can get on another time.
Oh, well, you want to make another point before you leave us? I was concerned that we've kept you too long.
No, I'm just teasing.
Thank you so much, Bill. Have a great day.
Thank you, too.
So we still have our analysis panel here with us on Virginia Insight. Former political reporter and now head of the Sorenson Institute for Political Leadership, Bob Gibson. That's just a long title, Gibson. That's why I mess it up all the time.
You don't mess it up.
Sorenson Institute for Political Leadership's Bob Gibson, former political reporter and now an assistant editor at the Fredericksburg Freelance Star, Shelley and Davis, and from the James Madison University Politics and Public Administration Departments, Bob Roberts, who's been remarkably quiet for the past few minutes. Do you want to?
Yeah, I found the speaker's approach very interesting. I did not expect it to focus on inefficiency. And the fact of the matter is, if we look at factually health insurance as all forms of health insurance, the same level of inefficiency is found in every third-party payer system because we use the same...
Third-party payer is private health insurance.
Yeah. No, it's any third-party. Medicare is third-party payer.
Oh, okay.
Medicaid is third-party. Private insurance. They all use the same providers, the same doctors, the same hospitals. They all have to pay reimbursement. And the problem is not Medicaid alone. It's not Medicare.
So you think inefficiency is an inadequate argument?
It's not to go after not expanding Medicaid on the grounds that it is rife with corruption. All health insurance reimbursement system is rife with problems. Any third-party reimbursement has the same problem. We don't condemn, for example, the state health insurance program taking care of me.
For state employees.
State employees.
And I forgot to ask Bill Howe what was going to happen to your job
as
of July 1st.
No, but I'm just saying we don't condemn that health insurance system that makes use of the same exact providers as Medicaid does, as Medicare. So it's a fraudulent claim. We have problems in reimbursing health care, any type of health care. Medicaid is no worse than Medicare. It's no worse than private insurance. And so that's not a legitimate reason to block Medicaid expansion.
I got to get a time when we've got Bill Howell in this studio here with you and have the two of you just talk to each other. But we do have a few minutes left for phone calls. If you've got anything political you want to bring up or any reaction to what you've heard so far here on Virginia Insight, phone number easy to remember as 888-WMRA. Talk. Next, we're going to somewhere in Rockingham County. Tim, thanks for patiently waiting on the line. Your question or comment for Bob Gibson, Bob Roberts, and or Shelley and Davis, please.
I received a robocall from Steve Delegate Landis a few days ago, which said, call this number to talk about the Obamacare expansion. And what this is really about is politics, that the Republican Party in Virginia has decided that opposition to Obamacare is the winning issue for them, and they're going to ride it all as far as they can. In the meantime, we're losing millions of dollars every day, 100% federal money, and we have several hundred thousand people that are uninsured who could get coverage. We have hospitals closing down because we can't pay them, and this is really an economic issue. It's also a moral issue, but it's primarily a political issue. And I guess I'll shut up, but I'd like to hear your commentator's comments on that.
Well, let's go to Mr. Gibson first. Bob Gibson, you have a response to what Tim is presenting?
I would not disagree that politics is at the base of this and that it is primarily a political argument. The Republican Party in the House has lined up its support for a budget without any Medicaid expansion for the poorer working Virginians because they believe it's a winning issue, and they believe that their base will turn out and support their candidates based on that issue, and they may have a point. It's an issue in which it's very hard to find a compromise because it's an all-or-nothing question at the moment. Either you have a budget and you have Medicaid expansion in it, or you have a budget and you have Medicaid expansion separate. And I think both sides are going to go down to the wire at the end of June, staking that position, and it's a political argument. The Republicans in the House feel very strongly that Medicaid expansion is good for their party to oppose and would be bad to include in our budget.
Shelley and Davis, I know that when you were a reporter, you would not answer the type of question I'm about to ask you. But now that you're an editor at your newspaper, I'm going to risk trying to ask and see if you can respond. Who's going to blink in this issue in Richmond? Is it going to be the Republicans or the Democrats?
You know, I mean, they both of them think that they have strong supporters on their side. The Democrats have, you know, the Chamber of Commerce supporting Medicaid expansion. They've got powerful hospitals lobbying for Medicaid expansion. They think they have the moral argument on their side. They think they have a very strong hand. The Republicans, on the other hand, also think they've got a strong hand. There's no upside for them to cave in on this back home. Most of them have relatively safe districts, and a lot of conservative Republicans don't want to expand Medicaid. They don't want their lawmakers to vote for this. They're coming off last year voting for the governor, then-Governor Bob McDonnell's transportation reform package, which raised some taxes, that got pretty unpopular amongst some conservative Republicans. I think that's why Delegate Beverly Sherwood lost her seat. I think that also took out Delegate Joe May. Those and other reasons. But, you know, that was a big part of it. And so I think for Republicans, there's no reason to give in. And Republicans also have localities on their side. Local governments are increasingly calling for the legislature to pass a budget. They don't really, you know, do Medicaid expansion or don't do Medicaid expansion, but pass a budget so the localities can get it done, get their own budgets done. That's what local governments want. So as we get towards June, I mean, I think Republicans may have done a good thing in for themselves in talking about taking Medicaid expansion out of the budget, because that, you know, to the regular person, that sounds like a reasonable argument to make. We'll take it out of the budget, we'll pass a budget, and then we'll talk about Medicaid expansion. I don't necessarily think they really plan to take a serious look at Medicaid expansion this year, but I think as it gets closer and closer to the wire, you know, somebody's going to have to blink.
Bob Roberts, hopefully she's not going to get too ticked off at me, but I'm going to read in between the lines of what we just heard from Ms. Davis at the Freelance Star. It sounds like she thinks, as far as the budget is concerned, that the Democrats are going to blink.
I think it's more going to be more nuanced than that. I think what's going to happen is when the governor was here last time, you asked them and asked him and asked him, would he try to implement Medicaid without legislative approval? I think he may try to do that. I think he may try to spend the money.
You notice he didn't answer the question times I asked.
No, yeah. I think he may try to spend the money and let the courts decide it, which gives him the out and permits him to sign a budget.
Next to Harrisonburg, Donna, thanks for joining us. Oh, by the way, Tim, thank you so much for that great question or perspective, for sharing it. But now we're going to Donna in Harrisonburg. Donna, you're on Virginia Insight with Bob Roberts, Shelley and Davis, and Bob Gibson.
Great, thanks. I just am calling to express my frustration as a taxpayer paying federal taxes and helping all of these other states expand their Medicaid that my legislators here in the state of Virginia are not willing to accept this money that I'm paying into the system to help people here in my state.
Bob Gibson, Republicans in the House, at least, have a different perspective on that?
Yes. For one thing, they don't believe the federal government's promise that it will, as Barack Obama outlined Medicaid expansion, live up to 100% for 3 years and then 90% after that for every year. They do not believe that this part of the deal will hold because there's so much federal debt that the federal government can't continue to pay 90% of the expansion of Medicaid. So they have an argument that you can't use borrowed federal money to continue this program.
So the taxes that Donna and every other Virginian is sending to Washington and not getting Medicaid expansion money back, what those Republicans in the House are saying is that's really not your tax dollars that you would get back. That's more money that the federal government would have to borrow from places like China.
They're saying it's an unsustainable formula that's being laid out as a promise.
Just like everything else in the federal budget, we go ahead and spend this money on defense. We spend this money on our postal service. We spend this money on other things, and yet it's all a promise until it happens.
Donna, thank you so very much for sharing your perspective. We're just about
Donna
to run
has
out
a
of
good
time.
A good point. I would just say that Donna has a good point that you know, that we do this for defense. Defense spending is a lot more popular at this point than even Medicaid expansion spending.
Right.
Donna, thank you. Mr. Gibson, I promised myself I was going to give us some time to hear at least a little bit about this, and we got a minute and a half left, so I guess that's really a little. Could you please explain what a shad plank is and why people should care?
Well, yesterday, several thousand, maybe 1,400, 1,500 people gathered out in the Pine Woods of Wakefield, Virginia, in Sussex County, southeast of Petersburg, down Route 460, and listen to Mark Warner speak to a largely Republican-leaning crowd about bipartisanship. It's one of the few remaining bipartisan events in the state on in the political calendar where Democrats and Republicans come together to listen to speakers. Last year, the speaker was Ken Cuccinelli. This year was Mark Warner. And they're polite, and they ask questions of the speakers as they walk up and down through the crowd, so there's a chance to actually talk to your U.S. senator or your attorney general and find out how they think about something. And it's a nice political rite of spring that continues now in Wakefield.
And you were there. Did you eat any of the fish?
The fish was not bad. I don't mind the fish because
I'm sorry, I laughed because that's nobody else says that, but go ahead.
The fish has bones in it, and you just have to be careful of the bones.
Okay.
And there's plenty of stuff to wash it down with.
For three of you, this question, by what date is a budget going to be agreed upon? Your best guess. Shelley and Davis first.
I'll take June 30th.
Bob Roberts.
June 28th.
Bob Gibson.
June 20th.
Wow. See, I knew Gibson was the optimist in the crowd. So we'll find out and we'll ask you about it sometime after the 30th of June. Our guests have been Bob Gibson, Executive Director of the Sorensen Institute for Political Leadership, Bob Roberts, Professor of Political Science at James Madison University, Fredericksburg Freelance Star Assistant Editor Shelley Ann Davis, as well as earlier in the hour, Republican member of the Virginia House of Delegates Steve Landis, and the leader of that chamber, Speaker of the House Bill Howell. Gang, thank you so very much for making time for us.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Virginia Insight's executive producer, Matt Bingay, associate producers, Terry Ward and Bob Levicky. We had extra help today from Sarah McConnell, Elliot Majerzik, and Andrew Windham at the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities. Some of our break music supplied by Robert Jaspe and Inner Rhythm. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more Insight.